Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is Mike from Ash Hats Podcast, and I'm here with my co-host, Dustin.
Hello.
And we're enjoying some good conversation. We're having a good time in the studio today. And the topic of conversation for today is
communication.
Right. We've been talking about what it is we're going to talk about today. And it's kind of funny because we were discussing some of the things that like interest us. And we were just saying, like, let's just get into it and talk about really what's on our minds. And like, not even really, it's not scripted. There's no script to life. Right.
There you go.
So in terms of like how we were going to do this episode, we're just going to talk about the things that pop into our head, and there's so many things.
We're going to communicate with one another.
Right. Because we don't get a chance to communicate as much as we'd like to, right? I mean, I only see you sometimes once a month, I think.
And today is that day.
The last time I saw you was the last episode of the podcast.
That's and true.
Sometimes I get a chance to work with Dustin.
But. Yeah, but that's not a bad thing, because usually when I do see you outside of here, and it's not in the group setting, it's because something has broken.
Oh, yeah.
I'm in a panic.
You're always in a panic.
Or if it means gain for you. Like if we get a cool item from work that you require.
That's very
true. Et cetera, et cetera.
Very true. I am the head of maintenance for Dunkin' Monkeys, and I haven't had too much to do, but I know that you just purchased a humidor that has a stuck lock that we need to work on.
Oh, my God. It's a 3,000 count humidor. It's massive.
You're going to have to take a picture for the social media.
If my wife is listening, we got it at a job site.
technically, everything's a job site, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm excited about it. It was filled with Nat Sherman cigars.
Oh, I love Nat Sherman. If anyone ever gets a chance to smoke Nat Sherman, they
do it soon because they're out of business.
Tobaccoist out of New York. They're out of business, and their cigars are going to become harder and harder to find. So nice score. Very, very nice job. I'm glad you got a chance to acquire it.
Thanks, Mike.
So today we decided to smoke a cigar that goes along with our topic. And I was looking for communication-related cigars. And whenever we do a podcast, we try to find something that's related. And I stumbled across like one of the people that I'm interested in studying about is Winston Churchill. He's a big cigar smoker. He's probably like the biggest name in cigar smoking, famous people. And the two cigars that he enjoyed, supposedly, were La Aroma de Cuba, which is, you know, a brand that's still around, and Romeo and Juliet, or Romeo y Juliet, I should say, to be more proper. So I picked up a Romeo and Juliet Reserve Churchill, and that's what we're going to smoke tonight. So
yes, it is.
It's going to be a hopefully not too long of a smoke. I want to make sure everybody has the opportunity to enjoy as much as they can from this and not be too vocal, but it's going to be a good smoke. It's going to take a good amount of time.
We're excited to smoke it.
Yes. A Churchill cigar is 7 inches long. It's a cigar that takes a tremendous amount of time to enjoy. And what I know, right? I hit you with a hard joke. No,
the microphone is 9 inches. You
don't hold the microphone.
To start, I'm doing a straight cut and my traditional 3-torch butane. Mike Ferris, on a personal level, is one of the poorest joke tellers I've ever met in my entire life. And it's so bad. Like, if you ever heard a story, and then at the end of the story, people sell you on that laugh. Like, how did the chicken cross the road? Why did the chicken to get to the other side? And it's like their reaction makes you laugh, but you're not laughing at the joke. You're laughing at how bad it was and how big they're reacting.
I'm an extrovert. I like to make people laugh, and that is, you're 100% right. I'm like a hyena.
You are. My mom laughing, is, right? My mom, I bust her on that all the time. She'll tell this story.
I love talking to your mother.
She'll tell these stories, and there's nothing funny about it. And she'll be like, this lady was walking down the street. She had white hair, and then she tripped. And she fell, but then she got back up. But when she fell, her face looked like the Scream mask. And so then she busts out laughing, like at this poor lady's. But she always adds that detail, like the white hair. You go, why? 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 Why?
Because you're painting a picture of the story that happened in her mind, and to her, it was hilarious.
But the descriptive adjective is so bad and so random. The curb was 6 inches tall. That would be a wonderful describer, a wonderful adjective.
Right.
She had white hair. What?
I think stuff like that is funny. And again, it goes into our topic of communication, because I am the kind of guy who likes to throw in jokes into pretty much everything that I do when I talk to people, because I feel like humor is a communication tool that you can use to basically junction with anybody. I mean, people even know.
I was one of the shyest kids. Like, I'm still kind of shy. Like, I do get, in large settings, I get, like, real nervous. And, like, it's, like, a feeling that I get that I don't really understand why I get it, because if anybody that knows me is probably shocked to hear that. But I learned in kindergarten that's your icebreakers. My favorite icebreaker is humor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I walk into a room and I'm uncomfortable, I'll fall. Like, I will literally just trip over my own 2 feet and get up, because people laugh when people fall.
I find it hard to believe.
You've seen me fall.
That you have that hard of a time in a public setting, because you are such a public person. I mean, like, with the job that you do and you deal with the public every day.
Yeah, I get fidgety. Like, it's not something like I actively seek to feel.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, like, I blend in, it works. But that initial 5 minutes.
Would you consider yourself an extrovert or an introvert? Because I know I'm an extrovert. I enjoy people listening to me. I enjoy that.
I prefer to be an introvert,
mm-hmm.
but I find by nature I'm an extrovert.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I enjoy, like, my wife and I, we call our Saturday scheduled days of nothing.
Right.
Where we just
stay
in.
Yeah, you've talked about that before.
We do nothing, and we just enjoy existing as the planet revolves around the sun. That's it. That's all I want to do. Like, I don't want to see people. I don't want to talk to people. I get annoyed if I get a call. Like, I just want a break from the world.
I'm a people person. I enjoy the interaction. I enjoy the parties. I enjoy seeing people and how they...
Yeah, like, is it possible to be a little bit of both?
Oh, absolutely. You could be in the middle of the road.
There's some days where like you said, like, when we're going to a cigar bar, or if we're going out, I do enjoy, like, when we're getting our group of friends. I guess, like, I like being around people that I know.
Right.
But, like, if I'm going into, like, a networking group, like, mm-hmm. especially with work, like, I don't know why, but, like, the first time I did a Chamber of Commerce meeting,
mm-hmm.
everybody has to stand up and introduce themselves. The sweat, dude. Like, just so much going on in my head. Like, what do I say? Like, I wasn't prepared whatsoever. It was my first time. So I'm going through the script in my head. Of course, it came out terrible. And then a month later, I did a B&I meeting. I mm-hmm. killed it.
Mm-hmm.
But
I just saw you in the news the other day. I mean, you had a really good piece through, I think, WNEP.
Yep. I put my glasses on. I was sophisticated.
You did. And you sounded good. And I think you didn't necessarily sound scripted. You sounded polished. I mean,
I had gym shorts on underneath.
Right. And that's the beauty of the Zoom call and the communication world that we live in now, is that you can make that phone call and be, you know, it's perception is reality a lot of times mm-hmm. with a lot of these things. And unfortunately, I think people have a hard time putting what they see versus the truth. And I don't know. I don't see any problem with you. I think you're a perfect communicator. I like talking to you, and I think people like talking to you.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, absolutely. No problem. Well, yeah. I mean,
and I think, like,
you have to be, when you're a businessman, you have to be a good communicator.
Same with a teacher.
Right.
Like, you have to take the subject and facilitate it to your students.
Mm-hmm.
So by nature, you're an excellent communicator as well.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Look at us. Look at complimentarians.
Right.
Today. Yeah. A rarity for us.
An incredible rarity for us, because we love to bust each other nonstop. Right?
I just found out that I have another property.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in your head.
Rent free. You live rent free. That is your favorite phrase of 2021. Bled a little bit from 2020 into 2021.
It did, but
you do live rent free 100% in my brain when it comes to just the insufferable busting of.
Come on, nowhere. Like, I won't even be anywhere near the conversation. Mm-hmm. And I'll scroll up to catch the top, and there's a little jab.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
What?
Because you're always on my mind. I think about you 24/7, right?
I did laugh, though, because when you said rent's due, like, a week or two, and then you sent one of those atrocious gifts.
Big Bird knocking on a door with gift.
That was
and
so funny.
That's another thing with communication I think is so hilarious, is that, like, there's so much nonverbal communication that you can do. Like, I love sending gifts that are... Whether they're
I'm glad you love it, because
completely
of
random.
Insufferable. Oh.
Well, I mean, you know, sometimes you just find the perfect GIF, and it just
you. Or I meme. Don't ever want to see your Google search history.
Oh, I can't. You would be completely obliterated by what I look at. I mean, it's
I don't
just
want to know.
Things pique my interest at all hours of the night. Whether
oh, no,
it's,
I'm the same way.
You know,
I was searching last night. I woke up to go to the bathroom at 2:30 a.m. and I searched the cause of death for someone that recently deceased in the sports world.
Oh, okay.
And out of respect to their family, I doubt. Right. Yeah, I don't know if that ever hears, but you know, it's still just sudden death.
Right.
And it's like, how the hell did, because
how does your brain get there?
Yeah.
Right.
And it's like that person tweeted 6 or 7 hours prior to their passing, and I respected him so much, and you know that sports season that he covers is coming up, and yeah, it was just 2:30 a.m.
Right,
and then I looked it up, saw nothing, and went back to sleep. Mm-hmm. That was it, done.
Yeah, occasionally I'll wake up in the middle of the night and be thinking of, I don't know, I was trying to remember the standard reduction potential for silver in an electrochemical cell, and I couldn't remember it because that's the random stuff that I think about. I think copper is 0.339, but that's besides the point.
Last week, I revisited the Pythagorean theorem.
Oh, Pythagorean theorem?
Whatever. I haven't even... I was blessed that Google helped me with the spelling because I haven't even thought about that.
That's an interesting topic for communication that I'd like to... Does spelling matter anymore? Because, I mean, all we do is...
Yeah, I'm very good at spelling.
I know. You bust my chops every time I misspell something.
But the reason I bust you on that is because I respect your intellect. I expect more from you. The fact that you don't understand the difference between Y-O-U-R...
Oh, I do.
...and Y-O-U-R... But you slack!
I just don't care.
It's disrespectful.
My God. That's disrespectful.
To us, because you're such a valued intellect, and here you are slacking on something so simplistic. Come on.
That's hilarious.
Clean it up.
Oh, you're...
Clean it up.
You're too much.
I have to... I correct you because I want you to know that I expect better from you.
Do you proofread your own texts?
I don't need to. I know I'm right.
Oh, hey, there you go. We got the confidence boost. You look like Castro over there smoking that cigar.
Casper?
Castro.
Castro.
A Churchill cigar is 7 inches long. I mean, you look almost like an evil villain when you're smoking one because of how big it is. And I have to say that this is a very good cigar.
So far, so good.
Romeo and Juliet used to be my only brand. Like when I first started smoking, I knew I didn't like acids because that was my first cigar. So I was looking around for brands, and Romeo and Juliet was the one that I like gravitated to immediately. I loved everything they had. I was never really... Churchill is my least favorite size of cigar. I don't know about you, but...
My 30th birthday, either you or Freddie got me one.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you were there because that was the first time I had Mamma Mia's and your cousin delivered.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah, I
Sunday
do remember that.
It was a Sunday on my back porch.
Mm-hmm.
On a day where I know I have nothing to do and I can be outside all day if I'm smoking a meat, et cetera, it's something that I know in my life as it sits, it's like an effing circus. So like, I can be pulled in any direction at any time. So finding that 45 to 90 minute cigar is perfect. And a lot of times the Churchill is between 90 and 120.
Oh, yeah.
So to be able to, and I respect it. So I want to be able to have that time. And to find that time, even when I'm home at like 8 o'clock, Benny could wake up.
Mm-hmm.
Or the dog could come out and just all he wants to do is sit on my lap. 80 pounds just sitting on my lap. I can't smoke this.
Yeah, you can't communicate to Clark, dog, because he doesn't understand the thing you're saying, right?
Clark Jerry.
Yeah, that's right. I you know what? I usually never have enough time to smoke a Churchill. Like, I'm always looking for a short smoke. I come out in the studio, and I enjoy doing research on the computer. I'll play video games through the emulator. And I'm only ever out here maybe an hour in a Churchill. Like, I refuse. I know somebody who cuts the cigar short.
I can't do that.
I can't do it either. It drives me nuts.
If I were to do that, I'll get a Toro or something.
You're right. Exactly. I mean, you buy a smaller smoke. I think I read that the most popular or most common smoke in the United States is a Toro or a Robusto.
The 5x5s?
Yep, the 5x5. The 5-inch length by 50.
But I think a lot of that, too, is when you go into a store, that's the one most commonly seen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to seek the bigger size, bigger rings, bigger...
A Churchill is going to cost you more. There's more tobacco in it. Like, by and large, I think they're $2 easily more. I quoted the price on these for a box of Romeo Julia Reserve Churchills is $150, which is not bad.
20 or 24?
27 count box, which I thought was quite interesting. No, I thought that was a good price, actually. It's a 90 rated cigar by Cigar Aficionado.
That's great. Good friend of mine from college, Josh Kudzinski. I think you met Josh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you definitely did.
Yep.
He got me onto these I would say probably 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
This is his go-to.
Hmm.
But, you know, the one thing that always caught my eye about it was it's a very non-flashy...
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Thing, like, or what you would call it, like a wrapper.
Yeah, it's a you very... I don't want to say uncommon. It's not basic. It's... It the wrapper band for Romeo and Juliet is not flashy by any stretch. No,
But in its simplicity,
oh yeah,
it's very.
It's a classic brand, like you know exactly. Romeo and Juliet. There are a couple brands in the cigar world that have stood the test of time. Romeo and Juliet's one of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're consistently going to make good cigars. I've never had a Cuban Romeo and Juliet. I'd love to try one. They still
exist. That's one of the best cigars in the world, they say.
That Cohiba's, there's a couple brands that are out there that still have Cuban factories. That would be something I would love to try, but haven't got there yet. But I still do pick up a Romeo and Juliet every once in a while from a cigar shop just because I know when I first started smoking cigars, that was my go-to brand. But now I'm all about the boutique cigars. I've been smoking a lot of Caldwell's, a lot of Room 101, like the cigar that we had a couple episodes ago. You have got me on a couple of the different, like the random cigars I've never heard of before. You are good at searching them out. I love seeing like all those cigars. But like I will admit that this is a really nice cigar. In terms of like communication in general, I thought that one other thing that we could talk about was some of the things that Churchill himself said were good communication topics. I don't know how much people who listen to this show listen to Churchill. I mean, he's not exactly the most entertaining, you know, speaker, but he was the Prime Minister of England during World War II. I mean, he commanded himself quite well. And some of the key points that I always look to when I'm trying to be a better communicator are things that he did. Like know your audience, right? So when you're talking to somebody and you want to, you know, convey a certain message, you have to know what it is and where it is that they're coming from, right? You are dealing with the regular public. You can't talk to them like you would talk to me, right?
Correct.
I mean, that's how I am with my students. I can't talk to them like I'm going to talk to you because it's not going to be received in the same way.
Correct.
And it's not even, it's more so than just respect because you respect everyone, but if I'm talking to a student, I might say something about, you know, chemistry and might have a conversation with them about the things that we're covering. But I just dropped all that electrochemical stuff with you.
It's interesting that you say that because, like, everyone obviously is different.
Mm-hmm.
And when you first meet somebody, you know, that opening salutation, hey, how are you, sir? If they say, it's Jim. Okay, so now you know he's a little bit more laid back.
Oh, yeah.
You know, hey, sir, how are you? I'm Dustin. Okay, I'm... Yes, sir, I'm Jim. Shakes your hand, firm handshake. You can learn so much about that person in the first 3 to 5 minutes.
You can learn so much about that person in the first 10 seconds.
Yeah, absolutely. What they're wearing. Like, yeah, you can stereotype immediately.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, communication's crazy.
And you can't judge a book by its cover, but at the same time, you have to be aware if you're having a conversation about a car with someone who's a mechanic, they know what you're talking about. I mean... Mm-hmm. It's one thing to, I'm talking to my wife about, you know, getting the oil changed. Now I have to get 5W-20 oil. She has no idea what I'm talking about.
Right.
She doesn't care.
Right.
So it's important to make that conscious effort to say, all right, well, when I'm talking to somebody, I want to make sure that they understand what I'm talking about and that they're the audience that I really want to convey this message to.
Absolutely.
I'm getting the oil changed. Doesn't matter what kind of oil it is, but getting the oil changed. I just got my oil changed the other day.
Did you? I'm due for one in my car, yep.
Do you? Well, you usually ask me to change the oil.
No, you've never changed my oil. I complained to you. I asked you if you could.
Mm-hmm.
I've given you a plethora of oil.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't think I have ever changed the oil. I know we changed the oil filter in the truck once. Actually, you changed the oil filter in the truck. I was very proud of you for that.
A 20-minute job that took 9 hours.
Yeah, oh, that was hilarious.
Was it? And then it ended up being a dead battery anyway.
Yep. I remember that. That was last winter, right?
Yeah, about this time last year.
You're ridiculous. But I think that's one of the key things that I think of is when I'm talking to somebody, I have to remember all the time who it is I'm talking to.
Right.
The other thing is making the message clear. Like, I'm a scientist. When I talk, I try to be as blunt and to the point as I possibly can. I don't like flowery.
Dummying down the hypothesis.
Right. I like you were saying with your mother in the story with the white hair, like the white hair was not part of the overall hilarity that was that. And not that funny for her, obviously. But
not for the white haired woman.
No, but at the same time, like,
mask.
There's things that are added into the story that sometimes when you're not there, like, they're funny to you, but they're not really part of the whole the whole story. I mean, you're not reading Moby Dick.
35 years on Earth, that part of my mom's stories now I find to be the funniest.
Yeah.
Is the parts that have nothing to do with the subject and the predicate, mm-hmm. but more so the random adjectives that, like, when we're taking a sixth grade test, what part of the story can you delete and yep. still
make the story understandable?
Yeah.
I agree with you 100%. And I see that oftentimes when people don't know what to say, they just keep talking. Or they're lying. They just keep talking and talking and talking. And it's like, just tell me what it is you need me to do. Yeah. I think that's all I want.
Yep.
One of the other things I thought was nice to kind of talk about was like how communication has changed. Because, I mean, if you're Winston Churchill, your communication's via radio. I mean,
yeah.
you might have gotten a chance to see him talk in person, but... We live in 2021. Communication mm-hmm. is so much more different now than it used to be. Like
in the past year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this time last year, did you know what Zoom was?
No, I had no idea.
Everybody was on Skype.
Zoom stock like went through the roof, and it's like crazy to think of that this technology actually exists.
We found Zoom because when we did our first couple recordings on "There's No Script to Life."
Mm-hmm.
We use Skype because
that's what you used. Yeah, I remember Skype when I was younger.
Using it. Everybody yeah. was using it. Both it kind of like in the business setting took place of AOL Instant Messenger, and mm-hmm. it was very popular. But then, like, okay, this isn't working. You know, one thing led to whether it be the audio, the video, etc. So we Googled what else are people using. Everybody ended up using Zoom, mm-hmm. and so we hopped on at an early time. But then, within a matter of weeks, through the pandemic. Everyone.
And education-wise, I mean, I have students that I converse with. We use Google Meet instead of Zoom because of security issues and things yep. like that. But like the fact that you can have a face-to-face conversation with somebody via the internet was...
You know what's funny, too? Like you were saying about Know Your Audience.
Mm-hmm.
When this all started, there were a couple apps. I think like House Party was one.
Yeah, remember we used to do House Party.
Yeah, and there was a couple others like where... Know your audience. Like if you're on House Party, you know you're looking to
yep.
have fun. You know, like
exactly.
it was meeting a niche demographic that was looking to communicate with their friends in like not in person, but mm-hmm. like that was such a huge fad for like a month.
Yeah, and it worked well. Like
it
I enjoyed
it. Still works well.
It's so funny.
Oh my god. There's still pictures out there.
Do you play any online gaming besides? I know you're big on the Switch and you're big in the gaming. Like, I play Among Us, which is a very, very popular...
David does.
Yeah, online game.
I can see you liking that, though.
It's a fun little game. If
yeah,
anyone's
you're
ever
all
had
about
chance.
Deception.
Yeah. Yeah, right? But I find that that's an interesting game for communication because the whole purpose of the game is you're trying to deceive the other players into thinking that someone else is the murderer on mm-hmm. the spaceship. And it's just like... We've come so far as humans just in what we can do and how we can convince people as to what we're saying is actually true. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Here's a fun. I'm extremely introverted when it comes to gaming.
Oh, interesting.
I hate playing with anybody else.
Very interesting. I would have not thought that.
Oh, I hate it. Like, I love solo missions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would rather, because you know what it is I'm so detail-oriented. Like, when I'm doing an RPG... I'm going into every single dungeon. I'm checking every corner, every nook, every...
I can see that.
I yeah. leave nothing unturned. And
right.
nothing. And I don't want, A, somebody to find it before me. B, somebody to say, like, David does this so many times when playing Minecraft Dungeons.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll be like, oh, Daddy, the bad guy's over here. I'm like, yes, David, but something, like, we can get brand new armor over here, you know? Like, little things like that. And it just drives me... batshit crazy. I can't do it.
I have a hard time playing things like Fortnite and Call of Duty with other people because you get these, and if everybody's different, everybody's entitled to their opinion, but you get some people who are really, really nasty on social media and in gaming.
You don't like to be picked on.
Well, it's not even that I don't like to be picked on. It's just I don't find it necessary. Like, I mean, if you're playing a game, and that's one thing, but you see those funny videos of kids like in the 90s playing with the headsets. And
I was that guy.
You were a troll.
I didn't play, but there was many a times where I'd have the headset on, and mm-hmm. like Jeffrey or somebody else was playing, and I would just have the headset on reading like the phone book or the Bible and just keep on going. So I'm like, why are you doing this? And I that was before they like mute people.
Right.
So they had no choice but to listen to me read scripture. Yeah. That was that. Here's your option, bud: leave the game or delete the game.
We had a friend Dane who used to do this thing called the phone zone, where he would prank phone call people, and he'd call them up and be like, "All right, you're on the phone zone. Count to 10 in 3 seconds. Go. Oh, you failed. I'm so sorry." It was so funny, and like I don't understand why. That's like fantastic. At the time, it used to be hilarious, but. Like, for communication purposes, if you think about it, like, oh, I mean, that poor person probably was like...
The IP relay.
Remember yeah. that? Oh, my God.
I used to call stores and, "Hi, this is Dan from the IP relay. I have Chad on the other line. Wanted to let you know that you are an igloo."
Yep. I remember
IP relay. What is your reply?
We used to do that to each other all the time.
Oh, my God.
And that was supposed to be a resource that you could use if you could not communicate and you just completely adulterated it for the purposes of prank phone calling people.
Who, me? Never.
Right? Yeah. And you think I'm the only one who likes to pick on people and troll you in the group text.
I can't see you being a troll online, though.
I'm not. Oh, I'm not. I don't talk bad on people at all. I like I said, I don't find any purpose in it. And you know what? I see a lot of it in
Facebook.
Do you
find dark humor in it?
A little bit. Like, I enjoy a little bit of dark humor every now and then. But,
are you into the banter?
You know what? Not really. Like... I got into an argument with somebody in a cigar group over Rush Limbaugh, right? Mm-hmm. Rush passed away, and I think he is a pioneer of radio. I think he's a very interesting fellow, but I don't like the guy. Like, I didn't like what he said about, you know, Michael J. Fox and Parkinson's. He just wasn't for me. And he's very well celebrated in the cigar world because he was a big cigar smoker. And I said, you know what? I don't buy it. Like, I think he was a shitty human. And somebody went right at me and was like, "No, you're a liberal and you blah, 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 blah." And I'm like, "No, I just don't like the guy." Like, no. Everybody's entitled to their opinions. Like, I'm sorry. But why is that? Why do you think that is? That people get so defensive that they're going to like bash you on the internet?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
You know, like, thinking about like where my banter origin came from, like when I was growing up in the city I lived in, mm-hmm. we had friendly banter during T-ball games.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember playing T-ball and having, you know.
That banter. Yeah. You know, and
swing batter batter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Or like chants at the other team.
Yeah.
And that continued all the way through football. Like there was this one guy, I think it was Honesdale or Carbondale, Shane Smith. They yep. called him Shane the Train.
He I think I know like, Shane Smith.
I don't know. It's a common name.
Yeah,
like
that's true. That's very true.
But so every game he ran for 150 yards or more, mm-hmm. and like he was recruited and all this stuff. And we played him and we held him to like 22. Ha ha.
My ashes fell in my
right
lap.
On your lap. And we held him like 22 or 27 yards. And the entire game, our whole sideline kept going, "Woo! because we were killing them,
right?
We didn't stop. Like even when we got on the bus, woo woo. Mm-hmm. And like I don't know. I think my generation just grew up talking, and maybe it was sports. Maybe it was like I said, our generation. But
well, and then you get into like that toxic masculinity is the conversation that comes up now. And then there's hazing, and the things that you say are problematic. Amazing. And like, don't get me wrong. I do think that there's something to be said about some things that you say can hurt people's feelings and it can be problematic. But at the same time, you know, the camaraderie that you had with your friends and the group setting that you're in, we grew up with that.
Like I tell my son, because my son's a little on the sensitive side. Mm-hmm. I just say, buddy, if Kyle or Mike or Josh or Gatsy, if they're not making fun of me, Jeffrey, if they're not making fun of me, it's then I worry if they're mad at me.
Right.
Like, honest to God, like, if you're not busting on me, I call you a day later, like, "Hey, are we good? Because
right?
you haven't said anything derogatory towards me."
You like to do the well check if I haven't had a group text message in 24
to 48 hours. I give you a well check.
Yeah, because I'm not busy doing anything, right?
Usually, playing the odds. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm the murderer in Among Us. I can't do anything. I'm really focused.
I put my phone on silent recently because I got a group text at 6 o'clock in the morning. And
it was probably somebody loving an image.
I am not, and laughing. I am not a morning person. And it woke me up and I was like, you know, I'm going to have to put this on silent.
I have every device on Do Not Disturb from 10 p.m. till 7 a.m. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, like I obviously will be texting, but I find myself, oh my God, I'm not on my phone. I'll miss like a text and like, I feel bad because I get back to them. But
it's the best thing in the world when you get back to a text message group and there's like 50 or 60 messages and you're like, oh, I got to go through
this. I was in an attic the one day, clean it out, all done, come down 273 messages. I'm like, what in the hell?
273.
I forget what it was, but it was something big.
As a group, we're very vocal.
Not today.
No, we didn't. And that's the thing. Like, well, it's really sunny out. We were talking about how like everybody's out. I was out chopping ice earlier, and it's a rare day that we get sun like this at the end of February because we've been dealing with so much snow and so much nonsense with all the cold. It's still 40 degrees out, but it's nice.
Oh, I'm in gym shorts.
Yeah, you are. I thought that was weird. Well, I think this is a good time to take a short break because we're about 30 minutes in. And what do you think? How are you enjoying the cigar?
I'm liking it. It's moving smooth. I ashed after your mishap.
Oh, yeah, it was so bad. I was trying so hard not to ash.
You were. You were like spinning it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it. I don't know if I like it more than other cigars.
Okay.
That could just be a me thing.
Yeah.
But I think we definitely had better cigars on previous episodes.
I agree.
It's not knocking my socks off.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Do you notice, this is one thing that I've noticed, is the peppery taste. I've been really keen on peppery flavor. And I had an Oliva G series, I think it was, and it has a Cameroon wrapper, and oh my goodness, it was so peppery.
I feel like the one, I could say this is bland.
You think so? Okay.
I do. Okay. It's not doing anything for my palate, my taste buds. I'm just smoking a cigar.
I get, you know, and I was reading up on this, like they talk about notes of coffee and earth. I have to mention that in every podcast. The only flavor note I really get in this is a mild peppery flavor. And I think that's just because I'm kind of looking for it. You know how they say, if you're looking for something, you're bound to find it, right? If you're thinking about a red car, you're going to start seeing a bunch of red cars.
Yeah, I don't want to say it's disappointing because it's a great cigar, but for being a Romeo and Julieta, it's a cigar.
It's a cigar. And you're absolutely right. This is not like complex in my mind. I would not use that word to describe the flavor of this
at all. That Sherman I had last night was much more complex than this.
Oh, I bet it was fantastic. I probably would have enjoyed to try one of those.
Yeah, you will. You will. You absolutely. I have a lot of them.
Well, I think when we come back from our break, we'll actually get a little bit more into communicating with friends, communication with relationships, communicating with the public, communicating in business.
With our spouses.
With our spouses, right?
Our children.
Oh, with our children. And just, you know, communication in general, because I think we've got a lot more to talk about in this topic.
I think we do.
We'll take a short break. We'll be right back. All right, everybody, and welcome back. This is Mike from Ash Hats Podcast, and we're enjoying a Romeo and Juliet Reserve Churchill cigar and talking about communication. I mean, the art of talking and getting your point across.
It's such a broad topic.
It really is. We were just discussing about how there's so many things we could talk about, and people go to like seminars to learn how to be better public speakers. Like, we both went to Penn State. Did you take that public speaking course?
Yeah, I did.
I did too.
Because we were in the same class.
No, we were not.
But I went in and became the public relations officer for the student government.
I remember that.
So they kind of pushed me to do it. I mean, I was really good at it, but you know, like, they wanted me to learn more about that for when I got to the like CCSG meetings at Penn State and like the bigger things to represent Penn State. They had me talking and I was shit scared. And the best thing I ever learned. Because it's the eye contact that throws me off, is you find a spot in the back of the room and you scan the sides of that one spot. So like if you're in an auditorium, this is what I do. I'm at the wall behind them.
Interesting.
I don't look at one person. I'm looking at that wall. I'm talking to that wall behind them.
Does that eye contact bother you?
No, it throws me off.
I'm gonna keep eye contact with you.
One on one, I could do it all day, and like in a group setting. But when you're, let's say like 30 or more,
Right. You're trying to present something that you want to be, you know, not only an expert on, but that you want to convey a certain message to a crowd. It can be nerve-wracking. I get that way right in the beginning of class when I see a bunch of kids and I'm like, oh boy. And then you take a deep breath and you just let it go. You just talk about what you know.
Yeah. And the attention span. We were just talking about that, and we'll get to that. It's so small that if I see somebody not paying attention, that throws me off. Because then I start, like, my mind starts wandering with them.
I'm used to that.
Especially with me.
No, not even with you. No, I'm thinking,
with students. The kids,
like, when I'm talking about something, I'm like, and that's the thing. When you're communicating to somebody about something that you're interested in, it helps a lot if you really are passionate about it. Like, I couldn't talk about junk removal the same way you could, just for the simple fact that I don't know as much as you do.
I think passion's extremely contagious.
I do. I agree.
Mike Tills, he was on our episode.
From There's No Script Oh, my God. Podcast.
He's so passionate about everything he talks about. That, like, when he's when he was with us a couple weeks back when he was in, we were outside in 8 degrees just talking.
Yep.
Because he was passionate. Then I got passionate. Then you got passionate. An hour and a half went by. And it felt like 5 minutes.
And that's what you can notice about people who are great communicators is they hold your attention because there's something about the way they speak. It's more so than just what they're saying. It's
the tone of voice.
How they say it. Right. So you can't be like this scared, you know, if you have to get up and have to make a conversation, make a speech about something, you can't be timid about it. You have to be confident in what you're saying.
Love it.
So, yeah, you have to love it. You really, really do. And that kind of leads into what I was thinking about with the next sort of topic is a lot of times we get into these situations or these conversations where you have to talk. Like you have to talk about something that maybe you know a little bit about, but you're not really all there.
Talk politics.
Right. And that's
because I don't know a lot about anything on the political spectrum.
Right.
Obviously, in the past year, that's been a huge main topic, a huge focal point. And I've bowed out of those conversations and just actively listened.
Right.
And I know we're going to talk about that a little bit too. But if I'm not, if I can't contribute, I don't want to sound like an asshole and just say, oh, I think this, but I have nothing to back it.
Right.
So I'll listen. I'll hear both sides. Maybe I'll form an opinion, or maybe I'll just respect that person's intellect. And
that I'm glad that you mentioned it, because I'm the exact same way when it came to economics, because I just started to look at stocks. Like, we were just talking about call options with stocks, and you were like, did you do a call option on that? And I was like, no. And I had to look it up. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Now I know what a call option
because
is.
Because you sent a screenshot. And if you look back at that screenshot, dude, it
looks like I made a call option on that. You're right. But at the same time, what's really interesting about it is if you're making a conversation interesting enough for your audience, then you're going to drive them to start researching and learning more about what it is that you don't already know. Because I've learned so much just from looking on YouTube and the internet about economics that I feel like I could hold my own in a conversation a little bit about ETF stocks.
Yeah, like they were talking about, and you and I both are fans of math.
Yeah.
And they were talking about the trends and using and that's how I was looking at the theorem.
Yeah.
Because the one guy I watched, he was showing how...
Oh, the candlestick models you were talking about,
and
too.
And then they used another one, too. Shit, I can't think of the name of it. But they were using different mathematical equations to predict. And to me, up until this past year, it was buy low, sell high.
Right.
That was the simplicity of it was that stock's looking low. You know, it's 52-week low, but they're showing good things in the future and the past. It's just an anomaly that's low, time to buy.
Right.
I've been doing good. I mean, right, statistically, exactly. I'm up a lot in the last 3 years. But
and that's what's interesting about this is like when you are somebody I talk to a lot about this and I value your opinion. When you have somebody who's talking to you about something, you kind of got to actively listen to it. And that's one of the other things that we wanted to mention when we're talking about communication is if you are invested in the conversation, you got to listen to what the person's saying.
I found that to be one of the areas that I was weakest at up until college.
Interesting.
I was a big fan of talking over people and just being a loud mouth. And
I've gotten in trouble with that.
Yeah. And, you know, like it's something that nobody brought my attention to, but it was just a practice that we did in my first English class. And Dr. Dolis, he's an amazing man.
I remember Dr. Dolis.
He actually Steamtown Cigar. He goes there and we still communicate. He's a big St. Louis fan. So, et cetera, et cetera. But he said, person next to you, have a conversation. When they talk, you listen. and when they're done talking, you talk back. If that was it, you know, and for me and Sarah Brick, her name was, she, all we did was talk about what we were having for lunch that day. And it was just something that, like, it, you feel that urge to say, yeah, me too. Yeah, me too. Yeah. And, like, you know, like,
I do just, that all the time.
But it's something that, like, until you realize you're doing it, like, wow, the art of actively listening. And I find myself now to become a, like, listen, and it translates so well into the junk removal because you're hearing their pressure points. And whether they know it or not, they're saying, yeah, I really hate that couch, but it's not going that day. It's like, hey, we have extra room on the truck. You mentioned that couch. Let's deep six it, you know, like, you know, that that's like an add-on, you know, like, I know you refuse to be sold, but that's just something that, you know, like, if you're listening, you can turn that into...
Absolutely. I mean, there's more that you can listen to than just what the person is saying, how they're saying it. When I'm having a conversation with somebody and they're telling me, you know, I kind of understand it. This happens every single time I teach a new topic in school is, does anyone have any questions? It's like the worst thing that you could possibly say because everyone is terrified to raise their hand because they're afraid to look stupid. They don't want anyone to feel like they don't know what you just said when I happen to know for a fact that nobody understood anything that I just said.
That question's so general and it's been heard so many times, so many different ways. Do you think if you're teaching the topic of the periodic table, if you said, what is your biggest fear on these first 10 of the periodic table, do you think you'd generate more? Like, if you broke it down into a more concise question instead of, does anybody have any questions? Why is the sky blue?
Right.
You know, like, but you're opening yourself up to that.
Right.
When I was in high school, I would probably have done that. Yep, you know, man,
like, I can just tell that would have been you. Yeah, there's this thing called KWL, which is a very popular technique in education. You write down what you know about the topic already, what you want to know about the topic, and what you learned. So with a KWL, the K part of it teaches, well, I should say it explains to me what you know as prior knowledge. The W, and by the way, this isn't just for me as a teacher. This could apply to anybody in any application. Write down KWL. What do you know about the stock market? What do you want to learn about the stock market? And then after learning about it, what did you actually learn?
It's good reflection, too.
Oh, absolutely. Reflection.
Especially in adulthood. Like,
such a major part of communication, because after you've had the conversation, you want to ask them, did you actually learn anything from this? Or did when I had a conversation with you, did anything come through? Did it stick? And active listening is something that is a two-way street, I think. And unfortunately, some people, they show not only their active listening, but their respect, I think, in some of the ways that they act when they're talking, because you can tell right away whether or not somebody wants to have a conversation with you. And that's a problem that you have to come to terms with, that some people may not want to have that conversation with you.
And just because we can go down a huge road with the next thing I'm about to say, you can usually pick that up through body language.
Yes, I think body language is a major part.
And that's not just on the KWL format, but like with the junk removal, like how eager are they? And I keep using junk removal because that's
You know.
But on anything, you know, like any, like the, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's something like by the time somebody says that's crazy three times, they're just saying it to, wow. Like,
okay. It's like writing the K in the group text, right? It's like, okay. Okay. My son has learned meh. I don't know how he picked it up from me. I know
that's
it. But
fantastic.
When I tell him to do something and he goes, meh, I'm like, oh, shit.
Well, how about this one? Last night, literally last night, David said that his phone, you had to put, Beth needed his phone for something for an app. Mm-hmm. She was trying to transfer her games to his phone because before he got his phone, he's playing all the games on her phone. Okay,
I've been down that road.
Yeah, but he turns his phone off.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Beth, we thought it was dead because do you leave your phone on constantly?
You know what? I try not to, but I do.
I do. Beth does. I would say
the majority of people do.
Right.
Yeah.
So we thought it was dead because it wasn't turning on.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, hold the power button, it'll turn on. And it turned out it was like 61%. I was like, oh, yeah, David, you don't have to go get your charge. He goes, yeah. And do you remember, though, like when we were growing up, that yeah meant like I told you so or whatever?
Oh, yeah.
So he's like, yeah. And he meant it as, yeah, I know it. I didn't need it. And so I was like, buddy, yo, don't be like that with your mother.
Talking and, back has gotten to be a big problem now.
But David's always so kind, so respectful. And he got very, very upset mm-hmm. by my reaction mm-hmm. because, and I had to calm back down. I explained to him, I'm like, buddy, when mommy and daddy were growing up, when you said, yeah, like that, it meant.
You got a crack in the ass. If I talk back to my father like that, yeah.
And you know, it's one of those things where it just opened that communication line that, no, I meant, yeah, it is charged. I never meant to be disrespectful. But again, I mean, I did it to you. But yeah, it is charged.
I noticed that with my son now. He's 6 years old. And like, I'll tell him to do something. He'll be like, okay, whatever. Oh, I hate whatever. It's my least favorite reply because it literally is telling me, yeah, I heard what you said, but I really don't care. And I'm like, buddy, we have got to talk because that's got to stop.
Nip that in the butt fast. David, but like, and then like, I kind of took a step back because his reaction was very unlike him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, and then I like when he stomped up the steps, which he never does, and like when he got upset, which again he never does. I had to think like his yeah, and it just two letters.
Yeah,
you know, like yeah, like you know, like it was. I had to calm down, and explain to him like. You know, there's a little bit of a language barrier here. Like, when you said that to us, it meant this. And the reason is because of that. Whereas you said it, like, yes, it is charged. And yeah, I, you know.
Do you feel like, and I'm glad that you brought this up because I've been thinking about this, and especially with communication. Like, I do the same thing with Luke as I explain to him, this is what I thought you meant. And is that what you meant? And he'll go, oh, no, I didn't mean it that way. And be like, all right, I understand. When I was growing up, my dad never really had a conversation with me about, like, it was basically just, if you talked back, you were in trouble. And that was it. Like,
I mean, my parents, you know my parents, yeah. Especially my dad when he was good. Everything was very passive.
Right.
And I love them both to death. Right. I thought they raised me. I was very blessed as a child. I mean, we mm-hmm. weren't living in mansions. But right. Yeah, like,
I'm happy with my upbringing,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
But, I mean, do you feel like, now that we're, I don't know, I hate using, like, woke culture and, like, that we're more worldly, but I feel like I spend more time than my parents did explaining what I mean when I say something.
You know what? I think it's because the world changed so fast for us.
Yeah, it really did.
And being present in the moment and, you know, Kyle on his group on his episode when they talked about parenting
mm-hmm.
really brought that to light. And like, it really, like, I was doing that, but then I acknowledged that, like, wow, like, you have to stop. And it's not just because I said so. It's explaining to them the why. It's because I just think it's because everything's moving so mm-hmm. fast. I mean, on all aspects, from technology to communication to the world.
Yeah,
you know, like
communication with a child, I think, is like the hardest thing I've had to come to terms with.
I think 6 is the age where it starts becoming easier,
mm-hmm.
and then like now, like it's so easy. Like that conversation last night. Was a conversation like you and I had.
Right.
And I think maybe half of it's because David's a mature 9.
Yep.
And the other half is that he's receptive to it. Mm. And he respects us that what we say doesn't go, but he respects us as parents that we're trying to help him.
Right.
You know?
And I think as we continue onward with our conversation here, one of our good friends, Eric, mentioned as a topic that when you're talking to somebody, you have to explain to them like what the purpose of the conversation is. And I have to, you know, give credit there because
that was,
I do it all the time. And I'm thinking about like, that's really what you need to do when you're talking to somebody is you need to let them know what the outcome is going to be of whatever it is.
Yeah.
You're
and
doing.
I think like, I'm looking forward to get home and talking to Beth about that.
Mm-hmm.
And, cause Beth and I, like we vent a lot. Like she's the one I vent to the most. Like, yep. How about this happen?
Yep.
How about that happen? She's the same way. Like, how about this happen on, like, she's big into the pajamas now, like her little sleepies and,
oh yeah.
So, yeah. Like she's huge into it. And like, yeah, my kids look good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like she does a good job with it, but like somebody will say something on the, one of the Facebook pages, mm-hmm. like, you know, whether it sounds sarcastic or whatnot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, ew, this person did that or whatnot. And it's like, do you want my help with making a response, like,
mm-hmm.
or do you want to just vent? Like, Eric, Nigel, I respect with all my might,
mm-hmm.
but man, dude, that yeah. That was awesome.
Well, and that was another thing he mentioned about, you know, when you're having a conversation with somebody, do you want comfort or do you want solutions? Like, mm-hmm. I think that was a very poignant point that he made to us. We oftentimes talk to our friends about topics that they want to hear in the podcast. And I think that was really nice to say, mm-hmm. because when you're talking to your significant other, and I do the same thing with Christina, I vent about school, I vent about work, I vent about things that are going on in our lives. Sometimes you want comfort. Sometimes you want them to say, you know, I understand, I really feel for you. And sometimes you want them to come at you with, well, maybe you should do this.
And whether you do it or not.
Right.
It's just another mind helping you with that problem, mm-hmm. to help you think outside that box. And in the moment where you're talking about them, you might have animosity or whatever the emotion might be clouding your judgment. Whereas they're coming at it with a fresh mindset that they can give you sound advice that maybe you would have gotten to within a day, an hour, a week, whatever, but they gave it to you right then and there. So it's saving you that thought too. Like, dude, that was incredible.
Sometimes I get that way when I'm talking to Christina and I'm like, she offers a solution and I'm like, what do you mean you're giving me a solution to a problem? Like, I could have came up with that. And it's such a toxic trait that I think is ingrained in humans that we want to be correct and we want to be right with everything that we do. And when we hear someone else come up with the idea, it's like, I could have came up with that idea. Like, that's not helping me. And you're absolutely right. I mean, you could have came to that solution on your own, but they got to it first and they helped you out.
Like, that's awesome.
That's the point of a relationship, is you have to be able to communicate with your significant
other. And Beth is good. Like, I think Beth and I compliment each other, mm-hmm. very well, because like, she's so street savvy where, you know, I fucking joke with it. You know, like, you give me schoolwork and I can do it without even studying, but
right,
you know, so she definitely balances me, you know.
So who has more common sense?
Oh god, her. I would never ever disagree.
I don't have a lick of common sense. None. And Christina will admit that she's the one who she pays the bills, she does all that stuff. I trust her to take care of all that stuff, because I make the joke that I don't control my life. I let her do the planning, because she's the one who runs the house. She makes sure that everything runs smoothly, and I'm just kind of, you know, making sure that everything is still working. Like, I'm a solution creator. But another one of the topics that I like that came out of our group text was from Josh, who said validation is what you really need to do when you're communicating with somebody, is to let them know, like, I hear you. I don't think your opinions, your ideas, I don't think your thoughts are stupid.
I love that too.
I love it, because whenever somebody is communicating with you, they're coming out to you and they're saying to you, hey, this is how I'm feeling. That means something. That's validating that conversation. So you have to be able to say to that person, I'm offering you feedback. And sometimes you want that feedback and sometimes you don't. And I think that's where that comfort and solutions idea really helps out in a relationship.
I think like constructive criticism, like, mm-hmm. Because I have a temper.
No, you have a temper.
I have some Sicilian in me. And so like, if employee A does something silly or stupid, you know, it's, listen, you did the job great. You were perfect with the customer. We got 5-star reviews. You're awesome. But what we need to really do here is communicate with me to tell me to call the next client, mm-hmm. because they are traveling 30 minutes to get to the property. So if you, I know I mentioned to you about getting to that prop or call me a half hour before, mm-hmm. now you guys are done. Instead of you guys sitting idle, next time when I say that, you know, I mean it, because I don't want you guys just sitting in the truck playing tiddlywinks.
Yeah, waiting for the next call.
And I know that they like to just keep moving. So just to, you know what I mean? Like, I like to hit them with that compliment first. And I feel like it kind of dissolves that, you know, you're really good at this, but what you could be better at is that.
The compliment sandwich. Right?
Yeah. That's my go-to move.
I have a hard time, I think, with feedback, just for the sense that sometimes when something is going right, I realize it's right, and I don't say good job, or I don't say like, oh, you know, that was what you should have done correctly. I just expect it, and I think that's a problem.
Yeah, for me, it's something that you can work on today.
Right, exactly.
It sounds like you're gonna. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And I try hard to do that more often. It's like, oh, you know, you really did a good job, and I try to validate as much as I can.
And to some, you don't need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, back to Churchill saying, know your audience, like. I like hearing that I did a good job. Not because that's me, but because, you know, I'm an only child, and hearing that good job, I didn't have a brother tell me, you know, I did this right, I did this wrong. And I like hearing that I did something right, because it's not that validation. It's just that allowing me to know that, okay, what I did was right. Cause I, you know, like, even when I do something right, like, I'm still uncertain,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it kind of diminishes that uncertainty. And it's everybody's different. Like, person B could be like, yeah, I great job. Yeah, thanks.
Right, you know, exactly. Like, I used to get that way, especially when it came to excitement over a topic. And I noticed this now with Luke, in that he gets really excited about something. And I might not really think it's that cool, but if I show him that I really am listening and I'm like, oh yeah, that he's really big into dinosaurs right now. Jurassic Park is the next big thing. And I know a little bit, but I'm really like, eh, that's okay. That's interesting. But now we're getting into learning about the dinosaurs and we're learning. And it's like, you have to be really excited, especially when it comes to kids, because that fosters, you know, excitement in them. And that could lead to something beneficial to them in the future.
Oh, yeah.
If you're excited about, I don't know, astronauts, then and their excitement's there, they may want to choose a career in that. And that might be what actually piques their interest. Like you said, everybody's different.
Yep.
And that might just be what is of utmost importance to them at that given time. Like, I noticed that with friends, I noticed that with students, I noticed that with everybody. It's that there's certain things and hobbies that are really like, that's what piques their interest. You have the Yankees. Uh-huh. Like, I'll be completely honest with you, I could care less about the Yankees.
What a beautiful birthday present I'm getting on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
The first spring training game is Sunday at 1 p.m.
I was going to say, your birthday is coming up, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, my. And so all I wanted for my birthday was peace and fucking quiet for that first couple innings. Right. Just to, like, the game's meaningless. It's right. Means nothing, but getting baseball in February on my, oh my God.
Well, it's funny because, like, in the group text, you'll send something like, oh, you know who? I hate Gardner. Or what's his name?
Why?
Because
Brett Gardner?
Brett Gardner.
Why?
He is the most obnoxious human on the planet.
Stop it.
He is.
Let me tell you a story about Brett Gardner.
Here we go. I got you all fired up.
When
now.
He was up here in 2008,
mm-hmm.
The one guy who's on my volleyball team now, he was talking about Brett Gardner. And Brett Gardner was, they shared a passion for country music.
Mm-hmm.
And Brett is literally probably the nicest Yankee you'll ever meet. He got that guy just after a conversation backstage tickets, and he's like, here, man, this is on me. Thank you so much for always being nice to me. Brett Gardner is the man. He is the kindest. Listen, there's some Yankees out there that aren't good people, you know? But no, I will not let you have that.
If I have to see him smash a bat off the roof,
it's passion, dude. Day,
that's not passion. It's being a crybaby.
It's not. It's letting the world know. And he was right.
Well, I'm pretty sure the last time somebody banged something against something, it was a trash can, and it was who was that, it?
Totally different. Oh, it was the Astros. They were sign stealing.
Yeah. Exactly.
He was letting that umpire know that he was wrong. And if you look at them, he was wrong. That a strike should never be 5 feet off the box.
Yep.
He cleaned it up.
I love it.
No.
I got y'all fired up now.
Brett Gardner, no. He is one of the best human beings the Yankees have ever had. No, you can't say he's a crybaby, whatnot. He's passionate. He's the heart of that team. Absolutely not. He is a great man. The family man.
I disagree. I got y'all fired up. Oh. I love it. Now, granted, I don't watch a lot of baseball. And
you're stereotyping.
Yeah, well.
What number does he wear?
I have no idea. Couldn't tell you. I could not tell you. I like Aaron Judge.
Why?
I think he is a little bit more in the public life a nice human being. I mean, I see more videos on ESPN of him being friendly to the crowd than, I keep calling him Howard Gardner, Brett Gardner.
Howard Gardner.
Like I said, I'm not a big baseball fan. That's the thing.
Brett Gardner is one of the nicest people in the world.
Well, and that's another thing is that, you know, when you're communicating to somebody, to me, who doesn't know a lot of baseball, and I see that on ESPN, it's easy for me to say, yeah, that looks like a real crybaby move for him to be passionate.
If you watch the entire video, you know, he was in the right. I'll tell you what, I would do it too. Now, when he strikes out sometimes, he'll go and obliterate the water cooler.
Mm-hmm. You know, you've seen that too.
Yep. He is Pat, and you need that because baseball is such a see the ball, hit the ball type of game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no, you know, it's hard to get passionate about it. He plays for the love of the game. He's going into his 14th season with the Yankees. His entire career was with the Yankees. This is a tangent we should not be going on.
Well, I think it's funny because I can tell just from the way that you're talking about it that you know what you're talking about and that
Brett
you're
Gardner's
passionate about it. And I'm glad you're talking about it like this.
He is coming back for this 14th season on a tremendous pay cut,
mm-hmm.
but just because he loves the Yankees organization, and right now they have some other things going on in that dugout. Mm-hmm. They need him. They need that leadership. He's the last player on that team that was on the World Series in 2009. And
I didn't realize that.
He went through so much. If you think about the Yankees in 2008, then 2009 when they brought in CC Sabathia, AJ mm-hmm. Burnett, and Mark Teixeira, you know, they brought in that surplus of talent, won it in 09. Then you think about 09 to like 13, 14, he had the A-Rod scandal, right? Yep. Where he was banned for a year and a half. You had Derek Jeter towards the end of his career going through some contractual things. He's seen it all.
Right.
You know, and then, you know, the transition when they were a 500 team in 2017. You know, they lost Aroldis Chapman to a team that won the World Series. Then they get Chapman back. Now they have the surplus in young talent. They need that veteran leadership. They need that communication from somebody who's been there that they can respect. Don't say Brett Gardner's obnoxious.
Meh.
Yeah, meh.
Well, and that's the thing. It's you're talking to me, somebody who I know a little bit about. Like I know Teixeira.
Everybody's a huge football fan in our group.
They are,
and I how passionate they are about football. I am about baseball, and most specifically the Yankees.
Oh, absolutely. So. I and again, like I said, I know a little bit. Our local team is the Scranton Wilkes-Barre Rail Riders. It's the farm league team for the. The Yankees, they are 10 years. They just extended the contract. Yeah. I mean, we'll probably see. I remember Giancarlo Stanton was up there. And
yeah, they get like their
Teixeira, I think, was
stuff.
Up there.
Like, yeah, Teixeira was
I think
up
Swisher
there.
Get, was there.
When players get injured, they do their rehab stint there.
Which is cool that we get a chance to see them. And don't get me wrong. I mean, I don't know nearly as much as you when it comes to that particular
topic.
It's
exciting. It's good for the area.
And that's why I like having conversations with you because you're passionate about it. It's the same way I would be talking to you if it was... Something chemistry related.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I lost sleep over the whole DJ LeMahieu thing.
LeMahieu, that's right.
Oh,
I remember
my
that.
Goodness. And DJ LeMahieu, I mean, he is the exact opposite of Brett Gardner.
Yeah.
Because he, and it's funny because we've been talking about different people. He is extremely extrovert. Like he, introvert, I mean, he is, you know, simple answers, you know, not flashy, doesn't show that type of passion. He just plays baseball.
Right.
He plays the game of baseball the Yankee way, so to say. Clean cut, you know, no wild hair. You know, he's just a baseball player. Plays multiple positions, plays them at a high level, multiple gold gloves, batting champ in both leagues, first player to do that in the modern era. Just plays baseball. You know, you know what you're getting every day he gets to the ballpark.
Right.
And that's amazing.
Well, sorry, I turned the tables on this podcast into the Dustin Bowen Yankees.
You got me going.
Well, I mean, I actually hope that in the future we can do a baseball podcast because I was a big Braves fan when I was little growing up. Obviously, the 90s, the Braves had a
especially
good run.
96
when they lost to the Yankees.
Well, they were up two games.
Yeah, they were up two games. That's right. I think I remember that. Yeah, but nevertheless, I don't know. That's something to be said about nonverbal communication when I see him pounding the and you probably have a t-shirt that has
I do. It says Let Brett Bang, and it's him with the bat.
Yeah.
But yeah, that gets back, like you said, the nonverbal, and then how it is communicated to others.
Right.
You saw it as him being a crybaby.
Right.
Whereas he was trying to fire up the team, let that umpire know, I know what you did there, and he was unhappy.
Right.
And he had every right to be.
Right.
And for non-baseball fans seeing that, I see where you're coming from.
Hmm.
And to show how little you know about baseball was the you brought up about the Astros and the garbage cans.
Yep.
And that is night and day. Because they were using that as a form of communication to two hits of the can curveball, one hit fastball, three hits slider. So what they would do was take the the signs
mm-hmm.
and have
the scandal with the camera that was up in the where I can't remember where the camera was that was right behind mm-hmm. or right behind the pitcher, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. They were actually able to steal signs right from the catcher. Communication is a very, very scary sort of situation, especially when it comes to baseball.
Yeah, because baseball, they're not allowed to have mics or have technology. It's
not
all
whatsoever.
It's all sign language. Mm-hmm. And it's a team derived sign language. It's not just from the catcher. If when you're on base, your third base coach is,
yep,
you know, hitting your, like, doing all these goofy things. And then one, at some point, there's one, it's the, you know, okay, this is the sign.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's like the key. So the next thing is what you're doing. And then it's another one to say, this is no longer the sign.
Right.
So it's like tap, tap, steal, tap. You know, right, like, it's, I love that part about baseball, though, is that it's a, very much a chess match.
Okay, I could see that. Chess, not checkers.
Right? It is. It's a thinking man's sport.
Football, everybody's mic'd up. But then you have people like Bill Belichick stealing signs. That was the Jets scandal, right? Back in 07, mm-hmm, stealing the, or videotaping, recording them on the sidelines.
I was definitely in college. So I think
it was
07.
And then it happened again with the Browns, mm-hmm, in 2019. I think it was just, yeah, recently that occurred. So there's something to be said about...
And he did against the Browns. Right. Like, why?
Hey, why? The Browns had made a really good run last year.
Yeah, I mean, not 19.
Not 19, no. Baker Mayfield did not have a strong showing in that year, to say the least.
One thing I want to talk about that Kyle brought up was, mm-hmm, tone. The tone,
oh,
of,
that's,
voice,
right. I did want to mention
that. You know, I think that's something that, you know, Beth and I talk a lot about, because sometimes she feels that, like, her tone of voice makes her sound like the bitch. Even though she's not being that. So, like, that's something that, like, she pointed out to her about herself. And, you know, it's something that, like, we're working on. And I think she's excellent at now.
Do you raise your voice a lot?
Me, no.
I, no. See, no, I, that's one of, well, my, she knows, biggest when, pitfalls is I raise my voice to Luke. And I dislike it as immediately after doing it. I'm like, wow, I really should have not done that. Because you're losing all power in the strength of the conversation by yelling at somebody.
I raise my voice, or I change my tone. Like, for instance, David was doing homework one night at bedtime.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, so I come up, hey, buddy, it's bedtime, you know, time to start getting ready. He's working on a math sheet. He's like, I really don't understand this. I'm like, yeah, but you were sitting at the table doing homework 2 hours ago. Where was this? He's like, I forgot about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that annoyance. So I let him know that I was being assertive with this sheet. And he's like, I just didn't understand it. I'm like, David, I don't care if you understood it or not. We'll work through it. Like, I know, looking at it, I know exactly what to do and how to teach you how to do it. But I wanted to do this 2 hours ago.
Right.
When, and, you know what I mean? Like, it's picking and choosing when to change your tone,
mm-hmm,
is something that I don't want to say I mastered. But I think when you change your tone too, like, you can use that to your advantage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, if we're having a meeting with the team and everybody's messing around, you know, I'm talking like this.
Right.
If I'm straightforward, using bigger words, you know, being that eye contact, changing that tone to a more serious tone, they know I mean business. And that's not just at work, obviously. I use that at home too. And I think, like, if you're identifying when your tones are changing, you got to keep control of that.
And consistency. Absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't. I have an awful problem with that, especially when it comes to switching gears between the playful, like, oh yeah, you know, it's fun to goof around, and then it's like, no, this is serious. Like, we have to get going.
I see that with you too. Like, if there's a debate going on and you feel so passionately that you're right, and off the mic, most times you are. I just got sword stabbed through me saying that.
Oh,
but
boy.
You are right. 8 out of 10 times.
Well, I mean,
you know, and but again, I don't want to puff you too much,
right? Blow smoke
because
up my
when
ass.
You're wrong, I don't know if you know, like, that's something that your tone changes. Like,
oh,
when
yeah.
you start feeling that pushback, I feel like when you're representing your facts to show your point of being correct, tone changes
very much so. I think that is something that anybody who's listening to this could take advantage of is. When you're having a conversation with somebody and they disagree with you, it is the worst thing in the world to switch gears and start belittling their character and their person. I mean, it's like one of the biggest fallacies
in logic.
We
saw that so much on Facebook. And please don't take that as
no.
me busting on you
oh,
before.
No.
Like, you know, like, it's just something that I think you've gotten so much better at.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. No, you live rent-free in my head. I mean, we've already established
absolutely.
That. I mean,
so I'm just getting more space.
I take everything that you say at heart, and I know that I could say pretty much anything to you, and you'll take it and do with it what you will.
Absolutely.
But I think that it has something to be said that when you're talking to somebody and you have facts to present, and it can be very tricky now, especially with the media and things that go on in the world. And there's so many things that people are, there's a big issue between opinion and fact. Mm-hmm. And when you present something as an opinion, like, oh, I think smoking is bad, versus, well, there are these things that do occur, and, you know, cigar smoking is a little bit better for your health than cigarette smoking. Well, no. Smoking is bad. Well, here's some of the research, and, you know, there's lung cancer, and then there's these sort of things that you have to consider, and blah, 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 blah. Like, I get tripped up a little bit in that regard because I want people to take what I read as fact and incorporate it into their, you know, their thinking, their knowledge base. And sometimes it happens when you're communicating with somebody that their opinion is completely against your own opinion, and it turns you off. It basically cuts off that active listening and makes you want to essentially say, like, oh, they don't know what they're talking about, and I'm going to disregard everything they say. But in all actuality, their opinion is a major part of the overall picture of understanding how the world works, because every opinion has a purpose in the overall picture.
I think in like 2009, 2010, that really became magnified because Facebook allowed everyone to become a thought leader.
Yes, very much so. An expert and a thought leader. Yeah, I like that.
And it's tough because you don't want to say, you sound like a horse's ass.
Right. No one wants to be stupid.
Right.
Nobody.
But then when you come out and say it, it's the man. Like, I think, like, if more people said, you know, like, I understand what you're saying, what you're trying to get, what point you're trying to make, but here's why I disagree.
Right.
And just have that, not perfect, but that adult talk, you know, and you and I will disagree on many things. We have before, and we will in the future, and we know that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But to say I humbly disagree with you, that's fine.
My opinion on Brett Gardner has changed greatly since, and I'm interested in looking at the video now just because now I know a little bit more of the context.
I'll share you the exact link that shows everything.
Context is a major part of communication, that when you hear something and you don't understand what happened behind it.
Like, if you see Brett Gardner hitting a dugout with a bat, something that shouldn't be happening, and yada, 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 I get it. I totally get where you're coming from. But if you understood what was going on in that day game, how the umpire behind the plate, that was only his second home plate game, and the way Aaron Boone reacted, and the way the team reacted, and even DJ LeMahieu, who I just mentioned, is so soft-spoken, he even said, come on, man, that's outside. And he bat like 360, no, it was 342 last year. Mm-hmm. You know, like, he knows what he's doing. Like, he knows the difference between a strike and a ball most times before the ball even leaves the hand.
Right.
You know, and for him to say something, he never reacts to an umpire. You know, if he strikes out, takes the bat, goes to the dugout.
Right.
For him to react, and then, you know, Brett Gardner to do what he did, you know, like, there's more to it. But you're right. That is a great example of communication and context.
Right.
Because just that one three-inning atmosphere of that baseball game.
Yeah. And again, it happens in the media all the time that's how I saw it. I saw a clip on ESPN where literally it's just a couple whacks against the dugout roof and all of a sudden he looks like a crybaby. And that's, if you don't understand where that person is coming from, their past experience and the whole picture, it can give you a miscommunication. And I think miscommunication is probably the worst thing that we have, because it puts a bad taste in your mouth if you don't understand what that person really meant when they were talking to you.
Do you think it's human nature to judge a book by its cover?
I think it is, 100%. Like, I think we all do it. We're all judgmental and prejudiced, and I hate that part of, you know, human nature, just because it's ingrained in us, and we all actively have to try harder to not let that, you know, govern our lives. But at the base level, I think it is absolutely human nature to do that. And I think better communication comes from looking at somebody and saying, all right, I'm looking at this person and they look at it a certain way. Maybe they're disheveled and you're thinking, well, this person can't possibly be professional. And then they go and they have these amazing speeches, these amazing concepts. You're like, wow, I can't believe that came out of that person. It's like when you hear about people with tattoos, like, oh, how could a doctor have tattoos? It's like, well, you're judging that person based on what they look like. Right. You can't possibly do that. I mean, they're a medical professional. They went to med school.
You know, that's something that changed in my mind too, because I'm a gym shorts and hoodie guy, and Junk and Monkeys, when we started, literally our uniform was gym shorts and a hoodie, because that was me. And then Greg, he started wearing jeans and started wearing that hoodie.
Smart man, because you catch a nail to the calf. I remember I wore shorts when I was working with Greg, and he's like, "That's not a good idea." And we were
Greg is the one of the smart. He's always right. Mm-hmm. His probability of being right is a little bit higher than yours. Like, he is the man. And, you know, outside of Junkin' Monkeys, he's a world-class dude as well. And, you know,
I caught my fair share of nails that day, and I was like, yeah, I probably should have wore jeans that day.
But just seeing him when he shows up for work, it was that he looks a lot more professional than I do. And, you know, like, so it kind of bended my mind a little bit because, you know, that appearance. So I have to uphold that appearance. So now I wear nicer hoodies. I have a pair of jeans for when I do an estimate. You know, like, it, that initial reaction, although my personal opinion is I like to be casual.
Right.
I hate dressing up. I don't even own a suit anymore. You know, like, I can't stand the whole tie thing. And, but now I understand it because it's respecting others. Like,
right.
I'm not going to a wedding or a viewing in gym shorts and a hoodie.
Right. You're absolutely right.
You have to respect your audience.
Right. You respect the atmosphere of the place.
And not just in the means of communication, but in your physical appearance as well.
I used to, we had this joke when we were in college that the chemist would wear like the shirts and ties and the biologist would be wearing the t-shirts and jeans because they were actually like out in the field working in the mud and the dirt and dealing with animals and stuff. But you're absolutely right. I would see people and think like, oh man, this person couldn't possibly... One of the smartest people I know, a doctor at the University of Scranton, was a pig farmer. He was a doctor of agriculture. And I'll tell you, his brain is filled with so much information. And he would come to school in a plaid button down. You'd see the mud. Like, he would not smell good at all because he was a pig farmer. I mean, he had pigs that he could teach you anything about biology and the chemistry of the food that these animals were eating. And just like the intelligence of this person, you would never think that just from looking at them. So I think communication that's nonverbal of what that person is wearing doesn't necessarily tell you what that person has behind their brain, you know, in between their ears. But you're absolutely right. If you're in a setting that you need to be dressed up in, you know, it's respectful in that regard.
Yeah, I found myself too, like on Saturdays, like if I have to do an estimate, like, you know, quick, and it's happened a couple times, I'll leave from my son's bowling league and go do that estimate. I'll even tell them like, hey, you know, I would normally
just came from somewhere.
Yeah. And I literally tell them like, usually I wear like the jeans and hoodies. So please know that, you know, I'm just coming quick. So just expect me in my casuals. And they laugh, you know, it's like, yeah, I don't care how you look.
Right.
But to me, it makes me feel better that they know that I respect them enough to bring it out. And whether it does to them or not, doesn't matter. It just, you know, alleviating that, because some people it does.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And that, you're absolutely right. You have to know your audience. You have
and
to communicate.
Just that
to
one
them.
Line of communication.
Yep.
Nips it in the bud, regardless.
And that's the difference between a sale and, you know, a job and not. You know, they could look at you and say, yeah.
Especially
in,
like, you know, again, I hate keep it on junk removal because this isn't a junk removal podcast. But you know, you think of a junk remover and you think of, you know,
a guy
somebody
with a truck
dirty,
who, yeah,
and filthy and muddy and not clean cut and.
That's, yeah, like, one of the mottos you have for Junkin' Monkeys. You're cleanly. Like, and you guys are. You present yourself with a clean truck, with an air about you that is professionalism. And I think that...
And it has that casual, too, because my goal is to make them smile and to make them happy. And that's not just my goal. That's the team's goal. And that's the company's goal, is to make people laugh. You put a purple monkey on something, usually they're going to giggle. You know?
Right? Yeah, I mean, and it's eye-catching, and it's part of the whole concept of showing these people that you're all in on your business. It's not just some side gig where you're trying to make a couple bucks on the side. You actually are a legitimate business, and you don't want them to think you're just some guy who has a truck who's trying to make a couple bucks. And I'm the same way when it comes to teaching, is I try to present myself in a way that I'm cleanly, I'm clean shaven. I want people to realize that I think about how I look before I'm even having a conversation with them. Because in the end of the conversation, you have that information and you're trying to, you know, basically take it all and say, all right, do I buy what this person's selling? Do I agree with what they're saying? Do they actually know what they're talking about? It sometimes does help to be a little bit more polished. But you don't have to be. That doesn't define you. Your clothing doesn't make the man. The man makes the man, right?
Right.
So the act of listening, all those characteristics make a good communicator. And I think that that's important as well.
This is one of those topics where it's so broad that we can talk all day. You are nubbing.
I don't know if I would say I'm nubbing, but I'm close. I'm very, very close.
You are close. I'm still about 2/3 away.
Yeah.
Great. You know, I mentioned at half that there was it was bland. Now that it's starting to get more condensed, I'm starting to get a taste.
Yeah.
I'm starting to, and it's definitely a second half cigar.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would say that. Well, it's a Churchill, so I mean, the thirds are much bigger when it comes to this.
Right.
I'm probably at the very beginning of the, well, maybe middle of the last third, and it just got more powerful as it progressed. And
potent.
More potent, for sure. The peppery flavor has gotten a little bit more intense. I don't like peppery flavor, and like I said, this is still not a cigar that knocks my socks off or is super complex.
No, but I respect it more.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
This is a cigar that is tried and true. It's something that has been around for years, and that if you're looking for a cigar that is that typical tobacco flavor, like there's no extra notes of sweetness
coffee.
Yeah, this is tobacco, like pure. And people really like that flavor.
Yeah, and that's okay.
I like it. Like I said, I've always liked Romeo and Juliet. So, I mean, I am enjoying it. But like you said, when we talk about boutique cigars and we talk about like the Caldwells and everything, there's just so much complexity behind the smoke that it's oftentimes difficult to pinpoint exactly what the flavors are. Like you get like espresso and chocolate and all these other sort of things. This one tastes like pure tobacco.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something good.
I like the tobacco taste, but even that I wasn't getting in the first half of our podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Now I am, and I like it. And it's smoking well. I did canoe.
Yes, I saw that.
I did have to relight twice. But I think that's just...
Well, you're conversing a lot. I mean, that's...
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's due to the length of the cigar matched with the conversation.
Interesting sort of side topic. I just saw a company that makes a tobacco-free cigarette. I mentioned this to you guys last night.
Didn't you send that in one group text?
Yep. I sent that in the group text about this company that came out with a tobacco alternative. They are cigarettes that they taste exactly like tobacco. So they've put all the research in to make a product. It is hemp-based. So it looks, feels, everything is basically what you would expect for a tobacco, but it is not.
I'm interested to see the price point.
Supposedly, it is cheaper.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Because of all the taxation on nicotine.
I think I saw a pack. It's a Canadian company. A pack. They're called TAAT, TAT cigarettes, from Tobacco Free Company. $3 for a pack of cigarettes. Now, neither of us are cigarette smokers, but I know from, you know, my parents smoking cigarettes that's cheap. I think a pack of cigarettes is like $7 for my father still smokes Newports, if I'm not mistaken. And that's half the price. So it's something to consider in the tobacco market that is a potential. I don't know how they make that tobacco flavor.
I read today that the next big boom is going to be in psychedelic mushrooms.
I was reading something about not only psychedelic mushrooms, but psychedelic drugs. And
because of its effects on the mental diseases. So I'd be interested to see that, especially because of my dad.
Right. Oh, absolutely. You know? And that would be something. I know a lot of states have started to consider legalization. I think Oregon just passed not too long ago legislation that says that they're not going to prosecute or criminalize. They decriminalized psychedelic drugs, mushrooms and LSD and things like that, where in the past it was, you know, Schedule One and big time. And I think that's a big change in how basically the United States is going, that we're starting to be more accepting of these things. I can't imagine communicating on LSD.
I'm sure some good conversations.
Oh, I can't imagine.
Steve Jobs, I guess, was big into that.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that as well. He was stricken with cancer, I know, in the later part of his life, and that's something to be said about the alleviating effects of that. We could do a whole podcast on that as well, medicinal drugs and things like that. But I would say that this cigar deserves its 90 plus rating from Cigar Aficionado.
I would say that too. Now, retracting a little bit from the first half, it's definitely a second half cigar.
Yeah.
Like you're going to get what you get from this cigar in that latter third.
Right. Now, I know you said you like the Churchills when you're out smoking meats and things like that. When's the last time you had a Churchill?
Whew. Probably September.
Right. I mean, that's like, this is the first time I've had one in probably
years. It was September, because it was right after David's first Holy Communion.
I don't know anybody who regularly smokes Churchills. This would have to be a cigar that if you're planning on spending a good amount of time
smoking. Would you smoke this on the golf course?
No, really? Not at all. No.
I would see myself bringing I probably smoke two cigars on the links.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so I would probably bring this. I would smoke this at a cigar party.
Yes.
Like Steamtown Cigar when they do their big tent party.
Mm-hmm.
I know I had the box cut, that CAO, the flathead.
Oh, the box press, yep.
Yep. They had a Churchill in that, and it lasted the entire night. It was like 2.5-3 hours smoke. And from that setting and that night, that I couldn't have found a better cigar in that house.
That is a perfect setting for that. I would agree. When I go golfing, I would say that I tend to like to smoke the cigar midway between, so like the ninth hole afterwards.
Oh, as soon as we're out, well, you know, as soon as we're out there, I'm lit.
Yeah, and that's, I have a hard time sometimes when I'm golfing, smoking and getting into the groove of things and trying to get something working. I didn't golf at all last year because of things that were going on.
Year two.
Actually, I went golfing once. I should correct myself.
David and I, and he did really well first time holding a club. We teed off when we were up by Niagara Falls. Excuse me. but yeah, that was the only time I swung a club this year. And I mean, I hit good. It's a lot harder with this tire around my waist.
But... Right. Well, I mean, it's a new year, new you. I mean, we're still working through our, our New Year's resolutions.
I'm getting that tobacco bus. Yep. I'm probably close to finish with mine.
I would say that this was a good smoke, a very good conversation. Anybody who's interested in any of the topics that we talk about, please feel free. We've been really big on Instagram and Twitter. You know, our followership has been growing. We do a lot more TikTok videos now. Actually, a lot of the videos that we show are topics on cigar wrappers, cigar sizes. I just did one on humidors and the different sizes of humidors. I know I can't wait to see that picture.
Yeah,
I've seen the humidor, but I can't wait for you to post that picture of the new humidor that you got.
I love them.
But check us out on TikTok. It's Ash Hats Podcast. Check us out on Instagram at Ash Hats Podcast. We are currently on Twitter at Ash Hats Podcast as well. And our Gmail is ashhatspodcast@gmail.com. I get emails occasionally from viewers who are like, oh, I really like this topic, or you should talk about this. I know that I love to hear from people. And
same. The
same thing is true.
Communicate with us.
Communicate with us, right. I get a little bit of communication from some of the cigar manufacturers. I know Caldwell Cigar, you know, they like some of the things that we post. If there's something that you think we should smoke, you know, let us know. And we'd love to hear from you as well. And I think we're about ready to finish.
Absolutely.
So I would say... everybody enjoy yourselves and smoke them if you got them.
Bye.